FW presents Panel by Panel, the show that dissects a single comic book panel from the last 85 years of comics history each episode. I'm Siskoid, and if you're listening to this on the day it drops, it's November 23rd, Doctor Who's 58th anniversary, so we're doing something a little different for this episode. We'll ask the randomizer to only search through Doctor Who comics and comic strips. And of course, I needed a fellow Whovian to cover the chosen panel, and that's Ashford Wright from Straight Outta Gallifrey and the Right On Network. Ashford, welcome to the show.
Hello, Siskoid. Hello, everyone. I'm happy to be here.
Here's my question before we actually roll the randomizer. Do you have a history with Doctor Who comics? I know you listen to the audios or some of the audios. What about Doctor Who comics? Is that on your radar at all?
Yes. Okay, so right now I'm looking at a Dave Gibbons collection, Doctor Who. I see a Tom Baker on the front. It's like he's wearing his Series 18 garb, and it's autographed by Dave Gibbons. Thank you to the
Sutherlands.
Yeah, the Sutherlands. They're awesome people.
I'm the same from them.
and then they did a third Doctor series where it was, in the end, it was not Chameleon, but what was the one with the second Doctor and he played a doppelganger? Enemy of the World.
Oh, yeah. Okay. It was Salamander.
Salamander. Yeah.
Okay. Salamander's a villain in that. Oh, wow.
Yes. I highly recommend. The art is wonderful. Paul Cornell is the writer. It's fun stuff. They recently put out like a fourth Doctor thing with Sarah Jane Smith and the Weeping Angels popped up. So, yeah, I'm more familiar with the modern stuff. I read some 12 Doctor issues. I thought they were pretty fun. And I have a couple of Fifth Doctor comics, but all of this is within the past 10 years. But back in the 80s and 90s, no, I didn't read any Doctor Who comics, so this is all new to me.
I like the extra canon of Doctor Who a lot. And as far as the comics go, I sort of had a few issues of the Dave Gibbons ones when Marvel was reprinting them back in the 80s. So I have a few of those. And of course, I have that same collection that you mentioned. Most of my Doctor Who comics reading was, for better or worse, were like the IDW series that the 10th and 11th Doctor, I think it's mostly 10th Doctor had. The art wasn't always great, but it was still some interesting comics. And then when Titan picked it up, which recently, I read a few of the 10th Doctor, 11th Doctor series, and I bought them all on digital in a sort of bundle. And I still haven't gone through all of them. I'm sort of waiting because part of my geekery is contributing to and laying out these Doctor Who role-playing game supplements for the extra canon. And I'm sort of waiting for when we're going to do the 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th Doctor books, like in a couple of years, to read them all so that I can adapt some of these monsters and characters into role-playing stats. Anyway, that's my story. But we're only looking at Doctor Who comics, whether that's from Doctor Who magazine, whether it's from the Marvel years or the Marvel reprints, IDW, Titan, Panini. There have been many companies that have held the license. We're going to roll up the randomizer and we're going to hit something in there, a single panel that we are going to discuss. So, let's go. The randomized series of choices using that database of available Doctor Who comic book materials, either physical or digital. Prior to the recording, we rolled up a year, a month, a comic on the stands that month, a page, and finally a panel. And in this case, we rolled the year 2013. Coincidentally, wow. It's the year of the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who. The month of April. Among all the Doctor Who comics out that month, the revolving finger falls on IDW's Doctor Who Prisoners in Time number 4, written by Scott and David Tipton, art by Gary Erskine. Page 2 of 22, panel 4 of 4. And you'll find that panel in the show notes at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Okay, 2013. Every license holder was doing an anniversary thing. And for IDW, it was, because they had that license at the time, it was a year-long 12-issue series that showcased each of the Doctors in their own story, all linked to the whole. We pulled issue 4, so that's the fourth Doctor. With one of my favorite companions, Leela, K-9 is also in the issue, not in the panel. So, the Doctor and Leela, was that a TARDIS team that you liked?
I love the Doctor and Leela. I love that time period. I love Tom Baker's look during that series. So yeah, this is a great pairing and really a trio because we have K-9 there.
As usual, it may be comics, but as usual, he's going to be left inside the TARDIS because he can't roll on grass very well. obviously, I like the Doctor and Leela too. I was quite happy to see when Tom Baker came back to do some audios for Big Finish that Louise Jameson also came back, and there are some Dr. Leela adventures in audio form as well as on TV. It's hard to say she's my favorite companion or classic companion because there have been some great ones. Everybody loves Sarah Jane Smith. I love Ace, for example. But Leela was pretty high up there. So she's in my top three classic Who companions.
When I say Leela, which story do you think about immediately?
The first one for me, because we had an inside joke, my kid brother and I. Because we watched this growing up. Face of Evil. The first time the Doctor sees her, he offers her some jelly babies. And she's under the impression that the Doctor, because of that face on the rock, is the evil one. Anyway, the Doctor seems to be wearing the face of the devil. And he says, about some jelly babies? And she says, they say the evil one eats babies. And we said that all the time for some reason. We found ways to incorporate it into conversation. And so that, for me, I always think of that, that moment and that first story. But of course, she was in Horror of Fang Rock and Talons of Wang Xiaoyang, Robots of Death. She's had some great episodes. But I tend to think of her first appearance. What about you?
You know, I think of her first appearance. I think Horror of Fang Rock is my favorite one. And Robots of Death is a fun one. They're not programmed to kill. Well, someone should tell him that.
Yeah, she gets some great lines in the Robots of Death.
Don't throw hands at me.
So let's look at that panel.
All right.
It's a horizontal one, as people can see on the site. Can you do the honors and describe what we're seeing for the people at home who may not be looking at the image?
Okay, so in the background, we see a blue sky, white clouds, so maybe Earth. However, it seems like the Doctor and Leela are trying to make their way through a stampede. And the animals, they don't seem like they're of Earth. They almost seem extraterrestrial. Maybe one of them, kind of a brittle type color, maybe that's a longhorn, but I don't think so. You got like these kind of orange, browns, and pinks going on. The Doctor, he's in his classic outfit. Maybe this is from series 13 or 14. We don't see the scarf. So maybe this is misleading because we see that hat, this Herbert Johnson hat that he wears sometimes, and it's covering his eyes. And Leela's trying to hold him up, and we see Leela, and she's a warrior. We see her weapons on her, clantily, you know, she's covered. But, I mean, one move to the left, one move to the right, things could be revealed. And Leela's going, Doctor, what's going on? Your guess is as good as mine, but now may not be the time for lengthy ruminations. So, yeah, they're in a life and death situation. I can hear the hoofs of the do-do-do-do-do. I can hear it.
I agree that these animals can't possibly be terrestrial.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like a longhorn. There's one of the bulls, the males, where I'm going to assume a male has these like large horns. That could be an earth animal, although... Don't earth animals have ears?
Yeah.
We don't see that. But the others, and he's the only one because all the others, or the pinkish ones at least, like the brown ones, the tan ones, maybe are the males. The pinkish ones might be the females, and they have these very dainty devil-like horns. Those ones, you can sort of see the profile almost, and it's almost more like a human face than it is an animal, or it's more cat-like maybe than bovine because it's flatter. You can tell from those silhouettes that's an alien animal, whatever it is. I did not notice the absence of a scarf, but you're right. It's like, where's the scarf?
Yeah.
It is the Doctor. I can confirm that. But the fact that there is no scarf is like, well, maybe in the panels before he had to leave it behind or for some reason. We don't know because we're only getting this one moment. We're stuck analyzing it out of context. But the missing scarf is too bad because there's so much movement possible in that panel with the stampede and trying to avoid the animals, that the scarf flying around would have been an interesting element, you know, visual element. As to when this is, well, the experts over at the TARDIS Wiki, they do like these chronologies of every story in the extra canon where it might fit. And of course, we're not getting any context clues here from the rest of the issue. So it may be that something is actually mentioned, like certain stories are mentioned in the issue that would tell us, oh, okay, that confirms it. We can't tell from this one panel, except for the costumes. And it's apparently between the Sunmakers and Underworld.
Oh, okay.
And I was thinking, well, wait, wasn't Leela in this like pale tan dress towards the end of her time on Doctor Who? But no, like that season, she did have that like short dress. But in the Sunmakers, she's wearing her tribal outfit, her leathers. Same thing with Underworld, I think. So at the end of her stay on Doctor Who, she was back in this costume. So that fits. That fits. And you read out the joke. It's very subtle, but now may not be the time for lengthy ruminations. What do ruminations mean? Obviously, it's thinking, but it's also what herd animals do when they eat. They eat grass, and then they ruminate as they go. It goes through different stomachs. I'm not a biologist, as you can tell. But but these cows, or whatever they are, would probably ruminate as cows and goats do. And I think that's supposed to be a pun.
Scantily clad was the phrase I was looking for. What do you think that is in Leela's pouch?
Oh, is she still carrying Janice thorns?
Oh, okay.
Has she not learned her lesson yet? I can't remember when she throws her last Janice thorn, because the Doctor doesn't look kindly on the use of that, but it's a little bit like the Seventh Doctor and Ace, where, oh no, you don't use Nitro 9, but whenever it's convenient, do you have any Nitro 9? It's a little bit like that.
Do you have any of that Nitro 9 I told you to throw away?
Same thing with the Janice thorns. Like, don't throw those damn Janice thorns. Wait, why don't you take them away from her?
You try.
No, exactly. So what do you think of the color treatment here? Because there's some elements of computer coloring that, just because of the nature of panel by panel, we look at the entire history of comics, and it's rare that we actually hit like a more recent one that would be computer colored and have these kinds of effects.
Yeah, it's definitely computer colored. I love Leela and the Doctor as a dual. I like that sofa. I love the browns. So I like that. I like that 70s look. I think that's why I like the Fourth Doctor so much. And when he got that other control panel room where it was kind of like soulful. To me, I thought it was soulful. It seemed like they were brown and wood and all that. To me, I feel like the animals and the blue sky and all that seems very computer generated and of the now. But I can kind of make myself squint a little bit, turn my head to the side, and just make it seem like these two characters are back in the 70s where they belong.
On TV.
On TV. As far as TV production, 70s.
On TV, the colors are more naturalistic. You know, it's not the blocky four-color process of earlier comics, so that makes sense. I like the vest has like the sort of checkered pattern on it. That's a subtle effect there. Yeah, the sky being blue, but blue and white because of the clouds. I mean, that's an easy effect to get on, even Photoshop. But the way that there's more white cloud right behind the main characters, that makes them pop and more central to the image. That's a good use of using that computer pattern in the background. And they also put, I don't know, is that fog? Because all the animals that are further out that have raced past our two heroes that are behind them, basically, they've been paled out. Like even the dark line is paler, thanks to a computer effect.
Yeah.
Is there fog? It looks like such a clear day. Or is it or dust? That just occurred to me. What if it's dust behind them? So there's a wall of dust behind each row of animals that they're throwing up by stampeding. And that's what's kind of obscuring them. I kind of like that idea. Or else it's maybe just the blur. Or, you know, it's like as they move past, quote unquote, camera, they become more blurry and out of focus. And that's kind of the effect that they're going for.
And what's cool about the classic Doctors, as it were, since their clothing was so eccentric, even maybe even sometimes the companions, they seem very appealing in comic book form.
Yeah. I think that maybe they would shine, you know, like the characters from the JNT era.
Yes.
Where he really put them, that producer put them in costumes rather than clothing. It's very, very clear that I don't think there's an airline where the air hostesses, as they were called at the time, dressed like Tegan. That material the lack of texture. That wasn't clothing. That was a comic book, you know, like a superhero costume. Adric in his yellow pajamas and Star, you know, these were, and they never changed out of those clothes. So in other words, it's a costume.
They were superheroes or they were the Simpsons.
Yeah, they were cartoony in a way. They were supposed to become more iconic in the way that you, when you think of them, you see them immediately because that's the look. Whereas past companions could dress up any way. And even the Doctor, when he went to, you know, historical periods would change his clothes. Like in this era, the fourth Doctor wears a sort of Sherlock Holmesian outfit that looks like this, but not quite. In Talons of Wang Xiang, for example. And Leela wears completely different clothes as well. You know, but later on, it's like, no, we got to stick to the look. And there's just like one outfit. And it doesn't even look like real clothing, really, when you look at it close up. So I like this era of it because it's just before that. You know, it's like you can't imagine the JNT era Romana, because Romana changed clothes every time.
Yeah.
And she has a lot of cool, iconic looks, but they're different for every serial or almost. So even Leela wasn't always in these leather threads. You know, she could change it up. But I agree that even in this case, where it's a little more clothing, a little more worn, you can still imagine the character and draw them. And it's like, yes, even if you can't do the likeness, because I'm not talking about the likeness here. It's hard to say. The Doctor's hiding his face. Mm-hmm. Regardless of the likeness, what the face looks like compared to the actors, you can immediately tell who they are just by their outfit.
Exactly.
Definitely.
And dialogue.
Oh, yes. And Leela has a very companion, generic dialogue here. You know, what's going on? It's exactly what a companion is there for. I'll tell you what's going on, because I've seen the reverse angle of this. And wherever planet they're on, who is causing the stampede? It's the Jadoon. The Jadoon are landing on this planet. So they're in the same tradition that you were talking about earlier, where the fourth Doctor met the Weeping Angels. Here, the fourth Doctor is meeting the Jadoon. So it's whenever we see these aliens, these new aliens in the new show, the Doctor often knows who they are already. And so that opens up the possibility that they met in a previous life. So that's what they're doing here, where the Jadoon and the fourth Doctor have an adventure. We're already at last thoughts, but my last thought on this is there's a Dutch angle, which I feel works very well for the scene because it creates the chaos of the stampede. It's like it's shaky ground. The characters don't know where to stand exactly. So putting it at a slight angle gives the characters that imbalance that makes it seem more dangerous. Yeah.
So it looks like in just one panel, there's movement going on.
Yeah, yeah. Any last thoughts from you?
Yeah, it looks like they're standing on shaky grounds. Definitely interested in reading the rest of this because I love Tom Baker's Doctor and I love this era of Doctor Who. And I just want to make sure they got out of this one.
They probably did because Underworld happened. So on that, thank you, Ashford. How about telling people what you're working on right now, what the Write On Network is doing, and where people can find your podcasts?
Yeah, so this is awesome. I'm on Straight Outta Gallifrey with Siskoid, and that's a lot of fun stuff because an excuse to talk about Doctor Who. And if you're into Blake Seven, we're doing something called Straight Out of the Federation with Alan and April. So if you want to revisit that show or experience it for the first time, now it's on BritBox. But you should join us as we talk about the adventures of Blake Seven on the Write On Network. Pretty fun stuff. Thanks, Siskoid.
No problem. I may have to be watching Blake Seven anyway because I ran a poll on my blog as to what show I should be reviewing after I'm done with what I'm doing currently, which is Buck Rogers in the 25th Century. And Blake Seven is not only a contender, but at the time of recording is actually in first place by one vote.
Yes. Okay.
So I may end up watching them for the first time in my case.
Oh, wow. Okay. I got to go vote.
Okay. Well, that's going to clinch it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let you go back to the margins. We'll listen to a short promo and I'll come back with listener feedback on our previous episode.
Mother, I feel sick. Send for the doctor. Quick, quick, quick.
Hey gang, it's Mark from the Social Distance Warrior Podcast. With everything that's going on right now, don't you wish you could just get away from it all? Like, far away?
It's the year 5023. We're in the galaxy M87.
Yeah, I think that's far enough. Well, Then tune into the Straight Outta Gallifrey podcast on the Rhydon Network. It's just what the doctor ordered.
Well, I suggest before we go outside and explore, let us clean ourselves out.
See, he gets it. And by he, I mean you. You know what I mean.
I am he, and he is me.
And we are all together, Gugukichu?
Exactly. On Straight Outta Gallifrey, they'll cover every iteration of that Time Lord.
You may be a Doctor, but I'm the Doctor.
In addition to every other Time Lord in the Doctor Who universe. So tune in and escape into the world of Doctor Who.
The human race moves on, but so do the viruses. It's an ongoing war.
A little more upbeat, please.
Leaving is good. Never coming back is better.
That's more like it. Check out Straight Outta Gallifrey on RhydonNetwork.com and follow us on Twitter at SoGallifrey.
And now your feedback, comment by comment. If you remember, the previous episode provided Brian Linton with his podcasting debut and featured a panel by Norm Breyfogle from Shadow of the Bat number 13. Captain Entropy misses Breyfogle and asks, I wonder what percentage of American comic panels in the 90s could have been captioned Batman hitting someone. For that matter, what percentage of American comic panels since 1939? Well, Captain, as the panel-by-panel pilot in canceled podcast Cavalcade proved, that way lies madness. Ryan Daly still won't return my calls. And speaking of Ryan, Chris Franklin says, Ryan and I have brought this up on Nightcast a lot, but longtime Batman colorist Adrienne Roy really liked her warm hues, and I, for one, dug it when she went outside the standard color palette for pages like this. So much more evocative than just having the standard blues, grays, and blacks you would actually see in an alleyway scene like this. Breyfogle was a master of kinetic action and composition, and that shows through in this panel. And Martin Gray isn't wrong when he says, it's funny, I like that panel in the context of the page, but the extracted version less so. The thinness of it, the jagged edges left by the notch, it just doesn't please me. And yes, taking panels out of context when the artist was really designing a page means we lose something when we pull them out. Damn you, randomizer. So as ever, a reminder that if you'd like to do one of these short podcasts, drop me a line and we'll arrange it. You will be handed a comic book panel randomly and we'll put it up for discussion. My thanks again to my guest, Ashford Wright. And until we refill that seat, the panel is open.